EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. How are you doing? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast, first-hand encounters of the strange and unexplained. The first guest we have for you tonight is Angelo from Spain. Angelo received a message from a recently passed loved one that prevented another tragedy that was about to happen. Then we make our way to the outback of Australia to talk to Johanna about her paranormal experiences she has had over the years. Angelo up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly recurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hola, Angelo, and welcome to the podcast.
Hola, hello, Nick. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. It's great to have you come on this evening. Calling from Spain.
Yes, sir. It's getting hot already over here.
It's all overcast and windy over here. Now, Angelo, you have a paranormal experience to share with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please?
Yes, sir. We have to go back. This was around the year 2001, approximately. And it is something that is very, it was a very, very personal, emotional story. And it is only now that I'm starting to talk about it in public to honor the person that was sort of the protagonist of the story. But as I said, it's very emotional, and I've been talking about it only in private, and it's only recently that I've begun sharing the story in more public forums like this one, like your excellent podcast. And it all started with a friend of mine, my best friend, who happened also to be the singer of my band. I was playing drums in a gothic rock band, and the singer was my best friend. She had a girlfriend at the time, and it was they were having a sort of open relationship, and I had really good vibes with his girlfriend too. Her name was Sheila, and one day she came home, and well, things just got started. We started a sort of romantic relationship, and in this strange love triangle, at first, it was really intense. It was really good because we were good friends, the three of us. But, you know, after all, we were pretty young. And to pull something like, to put that kind of relationship, to pull it off, you really have, you really need to have a level of emotional, psychological maturity that we obviously didn't have. Also, despite being within the gothic rock scene that was supposed to be really open-minded and liberal, people started talking and messing around and getting and middling. And so because of both our emotional immaturity, because of our youth, we were in the early, in our early 20s, and because of the people talking and meddling and giving us a hard time, we started to have troubles amongst ourselves. And so one day, just to make a long story short, one day she told me that that was it, that we better just remain friends, and that was about it. So anyway, we kept on as we could. And one day I received a call from another friend of mine, and he told me that Sheila, this girl, had had an accident, had been in an accident. And that's what they told me. They told me nothing more. And I already had a really, really bad feeling. But I picked up my best friend, the singer of my band, and we drove to the hospital. And when we got to the hospital, we found out that Sheila had just died. She died in that, as a result of that car accident. It was a car accident. So obviously we were devastated. And it just so happened that during that period of time, I was reading a book. If I recall correctly, it was a book by Sojal Rinpoche, which is sort of famous, a famous author about Tibetan Buddhism. And I think the book was called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. I think that was the, although it was a Spanish translation, so the title was different, but I think that was the book. So in that book, there were meditations or sort of rituals to help people who had recently died. And so to help myself and to help this girl, to help Sheila, I thought to myself, why not try one of these meditations, one of these rituals to try and help her and try to heal myself too, the pain that I was feeling. So one evening at my in my bedroom, and I was in my bedroom, and I started to perform one of these meditations, and I literally invited her, sort of spontaneously invoking her, so to speak, inviting her to participate, and even to use my physical body to participate in the meditation. And so, after a few minutes, the air in the room started to feel really dense, almost in a way watery. The atmosphere was like watery. It was like, it felt as if I was underwater in a weird way. And I also started to get a strange feeling of anxiety negativity. It was a bad feeling. It was a really bad feeling. But I tried to go on with meditation and try to forget about those negative feelings. I just tried to go on with the meditation and with the light. You know, the Tibetan rituals usually are very white light and colory and stuff. But I couldn't shed that feeling of something being really, really wrong. I kept going on, and after a few minutes, I had the absolute certainty. Don't ask me how, but I knew somebody else was in the room with me. I was definitely not alone in the room. And I was physically alone, but there was definitely somebody else in the room with me. And it got even more interesting. I started to behave like an automaton. I started to behave like a robot, as if somebody else were pulling the strings, moving me. And in this disposition, I felt the absolute urge to call my best friend on the phone, the singer of my band, to call him on the phone. So I did. I called him on the phone. He answered. And with a very trembling voice, words started to pop up in my mouth, and I started talking, not really conscious of what I was saying. I was not speaking deliberately on my behalf. I was somebody else. I was speaking on somebody else's behalf. And in this awfully trembling voice, I said to my friend something along these lines. I said something like, F, which is the name, you know, I said my friend's name, his name. I said, Sheila is here, and she wants you to know that she holds no grudges. She wants you to know that she forgives you, and she wants you to know that she loves you. My friend heard those words, and he quietly said, oh, well, thank you both. Thank you for this call. And so we hung up. After we hung up, all those feelings, all those sensations, and all this behaving like an automaton, the atmosphere of density, all that just poof, it went away. And suddenly, all was normal again. Oh, everything was feeling normal again. So I thought, wow, that was wild. But everything felt normal again, so I kind of relaxed and just went to sleep. And we're getting to the end of the story now. So the next day, my best friend and I meet in person. And this is what's most emotional for me, and most, that's what makes this story even more, I don't know how to put it, awe-inspiring, I don't know. He tells me, dude, do you know what I was doing when you called me to say those words? I said, no. And he tells me, do you really don't know what I was about to do right at the moment when you called me to tell me those things? And I said, no. How am I supposed to know? And he tells me, dude, I was just about to commit suicide. He was about to hang himself in his room. And that's the end of the story. Take it or leave it. That's what happened.
That is absolutely amazing. Mm. You know, you made a connection with Sheila. She came through and used you as a conduit. So then you spoke to your friend and saved his life.
Yeah.
Truly remarkable.
I never had, ever since, anything, any experience remotely similar. Nothing even close to that. So that's what happened.
That's absolutely amazing. You never had anything like that again.
No.
It certainly makes you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, what made you pick up the Tibetan book?
It was a matter of... I've been always interested in esotericism and mystics, mystical stuff. But it just so happened that some other friend had lent me the book. It just so happened that I was reading it at that time. It was a coincidence at the moment.
Well, we can say coincidence, but it's all connected, you know. It was everyone was at the right time.
Yes, yes.
If you hadn't been meditating after reading the book, then, you know, you wouldn't have had this experience and you wouldn't have called your friend, and then, you know, obviously what would happen?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that is amazing, Angelo. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm most grateful to you. And I do this as a loving memory to Sheila, because I think she did that somehow. And I think it's high time that I pay honor to her her memory.
Well, you couldn't have done it any better. Wonderful.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Nick.
I haven't heard an account like that in a long, long time.
That is perfect. And thank you so much again for this opportunity. Yeah,
Angelo, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind.
Great talking to you. And thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for calling in with that. Definitely. That was definitely an interesting one. That's certainly one that's going to stand out.
Thank you. Thank you. You're very kind. And have a wonderful evening, sir.
Yeah, you enjoy the rest of the evening. And I'll talk to you soon, Angelo. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Good evening, Johanna. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Nick. It's nice to be here.
You are more than welcome. Calling from Queensland, Australia.
Yes.
Now, you have some experiences to share with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please?
I will. So in a nutshell, I've lived all over Australia, mostly in the deserts, in the outback, as we call it, in the bush, in the country. And it started when I was about 7 years old. I was convinced that I could fly. So way back when I was seven, I was living in this tiny, tiny country town way off in the Western Australian wheat belt. And I went through this phase of not knowing what was real and what wasn't, because as far as I was concerned, I would come home from school and I'd fly. I'd just walk around the house, I'd take two steps and poof, I'd be off flying. And I'd go above the tree line, I'd go over the tops of the houses in the town. And it didn't seem to matter to me whether or not it was day or nighttime. It wasn't as though I fell asleep and I was flying. It was just something that I thought everybody did. And one time I was flying, again, in my mind. And I was convinced that I went to Ireland. I'd never heard of Ireland. I was 7 years old. I don't know what made me think it was Ireland, but there were green fields, low profile stone fences, fluffy sheep, cattle. And I just was convinced I had been to Ireland. And I told my parents, and they looked at each other and they looked at me and nobody said a word. I didn't watch TV back then. I never listened to the radio. There was obviously no internet because this was way back in the 70s. I didn't read magazines. I didn't know anybody from Ireland. So I had no exposure to anything Irish, but I was just convinced I've been to Ireland. Anyway, so I started to become a little bit more aware that not every child could fly. And I thought, oh, well, that's kind of weird. You know, I'd go off flying around in the sky and I wouldn't ever see anybody. It felt really euphoric. It felt very freeing. And I stopped trying to explain it to my parents because, you know, when you're 7 years old, you don't know what to think. And I just didn't bother trying to rationalize it. There was one other time I saw a person in the air, in the sky, when I was flying. And I was over kind of like these very old warehouses. I don't know what country I was in, what city it was, but it was a big city and there were these dilapidated old warehouses. And this other person was about 50 meters away and looked to be a very tall, long, thin man with long trousers. And I thought, wow, that man's really clever because he's wearing long pants and your pants don't fly up, you know, when you're flying. That's a smart guy right there. And we kind of acknowledged each other in the sky and we sort of slowly drifted apart and flew away. And then I started to slowly realize over, it must have been over about a year, that, oh, perhaps this flying business happens when I go to sleep. And I would have these really beautiful dreams and then poof, I'd be off again, flying over parks and houses and highways and cities and whatever. Now, when I was about eight, all of that stopped. My little sister was born and, you know, things just got hectic and it all faded away until I was about late 30s. And I dreamt that I was flying above some people in a park. And it was a very sunny day. It was just lovely. And there were very tall skyscrapers and I was going in between the skyscrapers and woo, around in the sky. And I remember smelling the air in my dream, but it felt as though I was really there. It was very weird. And there was a very sweet, almost like a sickly sweet smell in the air, but there was no breeze. And I couldn't feel the air against my skin or ruffling my hair. It's like I was just gliding away. And then the sky, the sunny sky became a little bit darker and then darker and I'm just floating away. And then I sort of kicked my heels, went woo-woo, and whooshed off and the sky became almost instantly black. And I'm there and I'm going around through the sky and I'm looking at all these twinkly things and I realize, oh, they're stars. Oh, wow, look at that. And I propelled myself up a little bit further and was looking around and I felt completely safe, absolutely at ease and just marveling at how beautiful the sky was in space. And I was totally at peace and it felt like I was in a womb or something. Anyway, as I'm casually looking around, I turned around over my shoulder and I saw the earth and the earth was quite bright. And instantly I saw this like a thick, shiny silver cord coming blur out of my belly button and I just went bang. I was filled with shock and horror and instantly I woke up because I was terrified of just dangling there in the sky. And after that, I never flew again. I woke up in my bed in a cold sweat, just absolutely petrified. And as much as the whole flying thing was lovely, I'm a little bit relieved that I don't do that anymore because that feeling of that loss of control was really overwhelming. Anyway, so that was the end of, you know, my flying escapades. But back again in the 70s when I was seven and I'm doing all this flying around, I used to see these shadowy figures. And living in Australia, one of them, of course, was a kangaroo. And this kangaroo would come at night, probably a meter and a half tall. I wouldn't see it appear, but I could feel it. And it would just sit on the end of my bed. And I'd lay in my bed staring at it. And I couldn't move my arms or my legs. And I'd just be terrified. And I can't remember how the kangaroo ever went away or how I managed to get out of that situation. I think I would just fall back to sleep. I really don't know, but I couldn't call out to my parents. I couldn't call for help. I was just totally frozen. And for the cricket fans, I used to also imagine that Tony Gregg, the South African cricketer, was standing in the window outside my bedroom waving a cricket bat. There was this, and he's a huge hulking man. Back in the day, he was about 6'2", very tall, strapping chap. And this figure of, I assumed it was him, I would see standing in the tree outside my window at night, and, you know, the streetlight would be behind him. And so I could see his profile, and I swear to God, he was waving a cricket bat. And again, when you're seven, that doesn't really make sense. And again, completely frozen, arms straight down by my side, not able to move. And then I would just beg all of the toys in my bedroom on the top of my wardrobe, all these stuffed animals and, you know, dollies and toys, and I would just beg them not to move. You know, just don't move, please don't move, because there's somebody standing outside my window and they might get you and you might in turn get me. It was all very, very confusing when you're seven. And I would have night terrors. I'd sleepwalk constantly, sleep screaming, you know, night sweats, all of that sort of thing. All of this was going on at the same time when I was still able to fly all around the world. And again, that also stopped when I was about 8 years old. So another paranormal thing that happened was when I was in my early 20s, by that stage living in London, and I was home alone staying at a friend's apartment, and there was nobody else there, and I was watching a movie on the telly, and this sound struck the lounge room door. My back was to the door, and it was the sound of about 20 or 30 steel or wire coat hangers being flung at the door. I could almost feel the impact of them hitting the door, and I could hear them all as they landed on the floor. And I thought, my God, someone's come into the apartment or the flat, and they're tearing the place apart. I don't know what's going on. And so I just literally sat there waiting for someone to come home. So that was about 3 hours later, someone eventually came home, and there was nothing there, no coat hangers. So that was a very odd experience. And I didn't mention it to anybody because, you know, how can you explain something like that? You really can't. Fast forward to sort of mid-1980s, I was in my 20s, and again, I was living back in Western Australia, and I was living in the bush, in the country, about halfway up the northern part of the state in a very small country town. And I had been brought in to work at the pub, and I'm a pretty hopeless barmaid, but I said, yes, yes, of course, I can do that. Anyway, myself and another girl, we started working at this one and only pub in town, and it was never busy. There was never much going on. It was quite a rundown sort of place, and I just did it, you know, just for a bit of a giggle. And my friend was staying at the pub one night, and I'd been invited to a different friend's farm about 7 kilometres out of town. So I went there for dinner and I stayed the night, and I just slept on the lounge on the sofa in the lounge room. And I had a very disconcerting dream about being a passenger in a car at nighttime. And my friend from the pub, 7 kilometres away, she was behind the wheel of this car, and she was driving it extraordinarily fast. And we drove past people on the road and they were reaching their arms out to us. And we were just like, no, we've got to go, got to go. And then the car left the road and started flying through the sky. It was like something out of Harry Potter. And then the people ended up walking in the sky as well. And so you've got people in the sky, you've got this car being driven insanely quickly going in the sky. And I remember very clearly, almost with a bang, being on the ground at nighttime back in the town, which was odd because my brain said, no, you're on a farm. You're not in town. What are you doing in town? And then I felt this overarching sensation of, you've got to hide, you've got to run, it's coming. And in my dream, the fear that had a hold of me was so overwhelming. I was desperate to hide. I was running in my dream up and down laneways and streets of the town where the pub was, trying to hide. I tried to hide in someone's shed. I jumped somebody else's fence. I tried to hide down the side of someone's house. I tried to hide, you know, like climb under a bunch of old rubber tires. And I knew it. It's in there. It's up this in the sky. It's coming. You've got to go. Go, go, go. Run, run, run. And there were no lights on in town. My friend who'd been driving the car like a crazed maniac, she was also in my dream and she was also trying to hide around in the town. And I knew this thing was zooming around in the air. I was desperate to avoid it. Anyway, next memory was that I'm screaming and screaming and I'm kind of watching myself being pulled up into the sky, and there's this bright, iridescent blue white light, and I am utterly powerless to resist it. I can't move, I can't fight. All I remember feeling was total fear, and in my head I'm screaming. And then somehow I found my voice and I was shouting at the light as I'm, you know, probably 30 or 40 meters off the ground by this point, and I'm shouting, I'm not ready, I'm not ready, don't take me, I'm not ready. And then I remember having this very irrational thought of, oh, I'm not wearing the right shoes, which sounds really quite odd. I suddenly went, my God, I've got bare feet. Oh, this won't do at all. If I had rubber-soled shoes on, I would be able to break the electrical circuit and then this wouldn't be happening. Yeah, oh, silly me. And then bang, I woke up and I was back in the lounge room on the farm and I couldn't move. My legs were ramrod straight. I was laying on the sofa like an Egyptian mummy, you know how they put their arms across their chest. And there was this incredible, again, bluish, whitish light pouring in through the window, because there was a window down, you know, the side of the lounge room. And the light was almost blinding. And then that kind of the light sort of moved across the room a little. And then with my eyes, because my little eyes were the only thing that could move, I was able to kind of look, strain my eyes to the fireplace, which was to the left of the sofa where I was sleeping. And all this blue light, pardon me, just came whoosh, like whooshing out of the fireplace. And it filled the entire room on that side, on the left side, and then on the right side was still this blue, white light. Oh, and it was just terrifying, and it was incredibly bright. And then I thought, oh, God, you know, I must be dreaming. So I thought, if I can blink my eyes three times and remember that I've done that, then it'll be proof I'm not dreaming. Aha. So I did that and blink, blink, blink. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm not dreaming. All right. Then my next thought was, don't close your eyes. Stay awake. Don't go to sleep. Stay awake until the sun comes up. If you close your eyes and you go to sleep, they'll get you. and the blue white light very slowly dissipated and slowly disappeared, and then I was left still completely frozen with my arms locked across my chest and everything, still frozen on the sofa. And then I could – oh, that's right, and the room slowly returned to, you know, normal, and I could feel something breathing on my cheek, on my left-hand side, like on my face, and I thought, oh, I'm going to pass out. This is too much. And then I turned my eyes a teeny-weeny tiny bit, you know, sort of trying to pick out my left-hand side, and the people I was staying with had a huge – Alsatian dog, and I didn't know they had a dog, and at that time I was very nervous around big dogs, but I thought, oh, okay. And I looked kind of at its head, and in my mind I said to the dog, please don't bite me. If you bite me, you can bite my throat where you're at. Just please don't bite me. Anyway, so he didn't, but he didn't move from that spot for what seemed like ages. It could have been 5 minutes. It could have been an hour. I don't know. And eventually the dog, you know, wandered off and went and over to the corner and laid down and fell asleep. And I still laid there awake. I don't know how long it was until I could slowly move my toes. And then I could move my shoulders a little bit, my elbows a tiny bit, but I still couldn't move properly. And I just laid there awake until the sun started to come up, and then I could move things a little bit better. And eventually when the sun had fully come up and I didn't feel quite so terrified, I got up and I went and woke the friends I was staying with, and I said, I'm sorry, I really need to go. I have to leave. I've got to go back to the town. Anyway, so I did that. I didn't tell them, of course, what happened. And when I got back to the town, I saw my friend who was also working at the pub, and I told her what happened. Well, I know, sorry. I said to her, I had a very weird dream last night. And she said, oh, shut up. So did I. And I said, well, you tell me your dream. She said, well, you were in my dream and we were in a car and we were in the sky. And I just went, oh, okay. Okay, now you're, you know, starting to worry me a bit. I said, what else happened in your dream? She said, oh, we were hiding and something was chasing us. And I think it got us. And I went, oh, okay. And it occurred to me that she had the same dream. And I told her a little bit about what happened in my dream. And we both decided that we were going to sleep on the floor of her bedroom in the pub that night and wear rubber-soled shoes, like sneakers, in case it came back. And I know this sounds really irrational and probably even quite funny, but we were in our 20s and we were so frightened. Anyway, we tried to go to sleep that night. We couldn't sleep. There was a big party going on downstairs in this pub, and we thought, oh, you know, shush with the party. We could hear people talking, a little bit of music, glasses clinking, all this sort of thing. And eventually we just kind of, you know, fell asleep. And the next morning we both spoke to the manager of the hotel, the pub, and we said, oh, what was with the party last night? And he said, there was no party. He said it was just a normal night. We had about two customers and we closed at 9 p.m. What are you talking about? And we went, oh, nothing, nothing. We swore there must have been, you know, 100 people at this imaginary party. Anyway, that night I thought, I'll be brave. I'll go and I'll sleep in my own room. I'm going to sleep in bed, though, in all my clothes with my rubber-soled shoes on, my sneakers, just in case I have to make a run for it. And that night I dreamt that a little boy had drowned in an outside laundry, which was underneath my window. I was on the second floor of this rickety old pub, and the laundry was under my window and about 20 metres from my room. And I woke up just, you know, snap, just this cold, hard bang. I wasn't frozen. Everything was fine, but I leapt out of bed and I could hear this groaning noise outside my door. And I unlocked my bedroom door and I opened it. And without the word of a lie, there was the pub manager's three-legged cat He had one ear, one eye, and three legs, and his name really was Lucky. And he was sitting outside my bedroom door, and he was groaning. You know how cats do? They kind of go. And I thought, oh, this is too much. And I shut my door. I locked it. The cat stayed there, camped outside my door all night. And I had to step over him when I opened my door the next morning, and I ran to my friend's room and I told her what happened, and she said, we're leaving town. And we literally went and spoke to the bloke who managed the pub that morning. Didn't stop for breakfast, no nothing. We just went to him. We said, this is getting too odd. We've got to go. And he went, when? We said, oh, now. We've got to go. And just like that, poof, off we went. I don't know if other people who have stayed at that establishment have experienced similar things, but it would come as no surprise whatsoever. Anyway, that was in my mid-20s. Life goes on. You know, I live all around the world. I have, you know, an amazing job. I'm very busy, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing odd or unusual happens for years and years and years. Then I start working again in the outback in Australia. And the outback is pretty much anywhere where there's a desert, either on the edge of the desert, in the desert, or on the way to the desert. So 2017, I would have been in my early 50s. I was living on a 2 million acre cattle station far, far, far west Queensland. There's only red dirt, blue sky, some cattle, of course, no trees. There's really no vegetation, nothing. And the night sky is extraordinary. In one year, I saw 16 shooting stars in 2017 at this property. I used to sit up very late watching satellites go over and planes in the days when planes used to fly and, you know, go places. And so I was very accustomed with, you know, the different flashing lights, what they were, and, you know, sometimes where they were going, all that sort of thing. And to give you an idea of the distance that this property was from Brisbane, if you got in a car at the property and you drove for 23 hours without stopping, you would get to Brisbane. So it was a 46-hour drive return trip. So it really was very, very isolated. And there's a certain amount of comfort in living somewhere that is that far away from civilization. And we were directly under the Milky Way, way out there. And so there were a few weird things. Every night for 2 weeks, there was a bright light, orangey, yellow, very low to the horizon, far, far away in the distance. I thought it might have been somebody who was camping, but the light itself was in like a semicircular, it had a semicircular look to it, and it was very glowy. I asked other people at the station what they thought it was, and they said, oh, you know, look, it's probably just a work crew and they're camped up. But I wasn't convinced. And one night it was just gone, it was there for 2 weeks and then poof, gone, just like that. There was another instance where I couldn't sleep and I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I went outside to, you know, have a cigarette and look at the sky and da-di-da. And the moon was up. It was a very silver, glowy moon, and that was over my left shoulder. And I noticed in front of me, again, way off in the distance, there was this glowing, very small, yellowy, orange. It wasn't an orb. It was this shapeless mass, really. And it got a little bit bigger and a little bit larger, and it grew into this elongated egg shape. And it was very orange and sort of pointy at the top and pointy at the bottom. And it just grew bigger and bigger. And again, I looked at the moon over my shoulder. I went, no, that's okay, that's definitely the moon. And I was just transfixed. And I knew that if I went to get my phone to take a photograph, that, you know, it would vanish or something would happen. And so I just sat there staring at it. And then the deep orange color became a more yellow, a very golden color. And it went through this phase where it became quite dark, just hanging in the sky for maybe 2 minutes. And then very slowly, it just sort of seemed to gradually get smaller, smaller, smaller. And then it disappeared. And I watched it and thought, wow, what even was that? And I didn't have any answers. So I went back inside and I went to sleep and, again, didn't mention it to a soul. And that brings me up to 2021, so last year. By this stage, I'd worked on several isolated cattle stations around the country. I hadn't seen anything, you know, unexplained or weird until last year. So now I'm in central Queensland and again on another cattle property. The sky here gets quite cloudy quite often, not like the desert sky. So, you know, you can't see as much, but what you do see is worth writing home about. Three times it's happened where I've been driving either on the main road or on two of the back roads here in between the towns. The towns are maybe an hour, two, three, 4 hours apart. So, you know, nothing too mad. One night I was driving along and there was this very low cloud of purpley pink, long, just this glowing light. And in the center of it, this crack of red lightning came out and then pink, like a hot pink magenta lightning. And it was quite low. And I thought, oh, that's fantastic. So I pulled over. It was at night, of course, turned off my lights and sat there on the bonnet of my car just watching this performance. And then I realized that these extraordinary happenings were over the top of a mining operation. There's a lot of coal mining that goes on around here. And then I was a little bit disappointed. I thought, oh, well, it must be, you know, the mining company must be shooting fireworks or explosives or something. And as soon as I thought that, I saw this, again, purpley pink, not an explosion, but a cloud that was above this particular mine site, and it came up and it loomed up and then whew, it just went back in on itself and disappeared. And the last colour to fade away was this beautiful dark pink reddish mauvey colour. And very slowly, yeah, it just faded away. And then I thought, oh, well, that was lovely. And then I got back in my car and I turned the lights on and off I drove. And I've not seen anything quite like it before or since. And that's my story.
Wow, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
When you were a kid, 7, 8 years old, astral traveling.
I think that's what it was. I, in my 20s, did a bit of reading about it because I didn't understand what those experiences were. And I swear to God, Nick, I would come home from school and I would see my mum and I would say, I've been flying, mum. And she'd say, okay, well, good for you. Where did you go today? And, you know, I'd tell her what it all looked like and she would just say, oh, darling, that's lovely. Good on you. And in places I would go to, they were very foreign looking to me. I was a little kid from the country who used to climb trees and, you know, play with puppy dogs and sticks in the creek. And, you know, I would see these lush green forests with tall, almost like poplar trees, and people wearing these beautiful, very old world clothing with the men would have very high collared shirts and long dark black coats, and the women would wear very sort of pumpy dresses. And then, you know, another time I'd be in a city and like the skyscraper time, you know, I'd go down and go, ooh, a little bit like Spider-Man. I'd go down in between the skyscrapers and just chuffing around the sky as though I owned it. It was amazing.
Yeah, it sounds quite the adventure for when you're that age.
Yeah, and if I had read a lot of fairy tale books, I would counteract that with saying, oh, well, you know, it's all in my mind. I read fairy tales and, you know, I've made it all up. But my mother actually stopped reading me fairy tales because they were too scary. You know, Jack and the Beanstalk and Hansel and Gretel and the Wicked Witch and all this sort of thing. I didn't really enjoy fairy tales that much. And so, yeah, my life was very simple little outdoor life. And all this flying, I was quite shocked when my sister was born and I realised that I couldn't go flying anymore. Oh, I can't go anywhere. Oh, I wonder why that is. Oh, well. And then life just carried on.
And that's pretty much stopped. And then you had that one occasion in your 30s.
Yes. Yes. I have sometimes wondered about trying to reconnect with that experience again, but the draw to reconnect with that and try to re-experience is not strong enough for me to actually give it another go.
Like you said, the loss of control, isn't it? I think when you're a kid, you're kind of open to everything, you know, you're free. And I think when you're an adult, we are, you know, in kind of closed boundaries and we want to be more in control of our life, you know, instead of things just happening. So I think we lose a lot of that kind of stuff when you're a kid.
Yeah. When you're a kid, you've got that whole spontaneity and, it's a very right-brained existence. Everything's all about emotional gratification. You go, "Ooh, that looks good. Wee, I'll go over there," or "Wee, I'll do this." And then, yeah, I think a lot of that as we get older and we start going to school and then, you know, we grow up, we get a job, da-da-da. I think a lot of that just gradually disappears.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think when you're a kid, it's better. You know, everything is exciting. Everything is fresh. You know, there's no danger. Everything is, you know, amazing, colourful.
Yeah, everything's fascinating. Yeah. And, you know, I'll never forget that feeling of seeing the long, skinny man in the sky and thinking just how clever he was to wear trousers, because when I would fly, sometimes I would have to remember, I've got a skirt on today. Oh, well, you know, when I land, when I go down, you know, I'll have to hold my skirt down. And sometimes I'd wear shorts. But, yeah, he was in long trousers and I thought, oh, he's a clever cookie.
It is quite possible that he was another traveller.
Well, quite likely, yeah, yeah. And he's the only person I've ever seen out there in the sky. And I don't know what made me expect that there would be more people. Oh, I've just remembered. I remember seeing a man and a woman in a park, and it was a beautiful, very, very green park, like a very old world park. And I remember coming down from the sky. I went down below the level of the trees and I saw this lady, and she had this beautiful pale blue dress on, and it was satin, and I wanted to touch it, and I thought, well, you know, gosh, that's probably a little bit rude. So I flew down and I landed on the path and I walked toward this lady and this man, and they were very polite, and we had a very short conversation. And I remember just staring at her dress, desperately wanting to touch the fabric because it just looked so lovely. And I thought, I can't do it. That's quite bad manners. No. Anyway, so we said our goodbyes and off they went. And I waited until they'd gone. And then I just very slowly leaned forward, took two steps and went back up in the sky. And then I flew around in circles above them, watching them, because I wanted to see where the lady in my favourite blue dress was going to go. And then I thought, no, I've got things to do. Woof, and off I went again.
Wow. Okay.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
And what's up with Tony Gregg?
Tony Gregg, I know, right? My dad was a mad cricket player and watcher. And we used to have to go to all these weekend cricket games, you know, in the country. That's all you do. You play sport because there's, you know, not too much else to do. And Tony Greig was on the South African cricket team. He was the captain, I think. And he was very tall, very tanned, very blonde with piercing blue eyes. And he had this South African accent that I'd never heard before. And I was both enthralled by him and utterly petrified of him. And to imagine that he, of all people, would be standing outside my bedroom window waving a cricket bat. I know, it's absurd, but I can still see, clear as a bell in my mind's eye, the shape, the head, the arms, his legs, and that the thing that he was holding, which in my little seven-year-old brain was definitely a cricket bat. It was very odd. There used to be a lot of spooky things going on in that house, things banging at night, things banging on the water pipes, people running around in the side garden and the front garden. And we had an outside toilet back then, very sophisticated setup. And I was so scared to have to go to the outside toilet because, you know, there were no lights, no torches. And I would literally sprint outside, do what I had to do, and then sprint back in because I was convinced that, you know, something was going to get me. But it didn't, of course, and I'm still here.
And the shadow kangaroo, did you have a fear of kangaroos or anything?
No, no, not at all. No, I love kangaroos. You know, kangaroos, wombats, little marsupials of all sorts. No, I'm not afraid of any animals. But this thing, it came about three times and I could feel the end of the bed go down when it sat on the bed. And just looking at its profile, I was just convinced it was a kangaroo. It was a malevolent kangaroo.
I wonder if it could be anything like, you know, like Skinwalker, but maybe as an Aboriginal form.
Oh, maybe. Well, you know, in Aboriginal folklore back in the day, they had a being called Featherfoot Gadaitcha Man, and he was a spiritual, he was a spirit who could take human form, and if Gadaitcha Man wished ill on you, you would mysteriously end up deceased. And it never occurred to me that it could have been a shape-shifting thing. Yeah, I've never really thought about that. I have listened to episodes about Skinwalker Ranch and it's really put the fear into me. But, you know, I like to listen to these things to try and work out an answer to some of these experiences.
It's just an idea. I mean, it never did you any harm, did it? It just came and sat on your bed.
It just came. I remember its eyes, very dark. Very dark eyes, and don't ask me how I could even see its eyes because it was pitch black. But I felt that I could see its eyes, and it never blinked, not once. And it bothered me a lot that I couldn't move, but it bothered me even more that it wouldn't move. I would want it to be gone, get off my bed, you know, and it wouldn't. And like I say, I don't remember how it, those experiences resolved themselves. Perhaps I went back to sleep. I can only hope I did.
But you said it was an active house as well, you know, and I have plenty of guests that in their childhood, you know, they talk about visits from different types of creatures, you know, that used to come in and either hide behind their bed or sit on their bed. So, and I don't think it's all necessary childhood imagination, you know?
Yeah, you've just reminded me that I was convinced that something lived inside my wardrobe, and the wardrobe was opposite my bed, and where this kangaroo would sit was a foot away from the wardrobe. But yeah, I very rarely opened my wardrobe doors, and if I did, it would be just to reach in, snatch a piece of clothing and slam it shut. I was quite sure that if I left my wardrobe door open, I would be sucked into it and I'd be taken away somewhere.
A scary closet.
Yeah, I know. It's like The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, but nowhere near as much fun.
See, I had a guest on. I think it's going to be released in a couple of weeks. But she had the opposite. Her solace was actually hiding in the closet.
Really? Hiding in there from?
From her experiences, yeah.
Oh, wow. And I suppose in there it's warm and it's dark and nothing you can get inside there. Oh, isn't that interesting?
She's in her 70s now. And she was telling me she would still do that up until her 50s, where the closet would be her safety, you know, a safety net, a place where she can go and be safe and just close out the world from, you know, all the things that were happening to her.
Oh, I think that's really beautiful to have a nice warm place that is that sanctuary and that safety. I think is so good, because one thing that I have always felt when these odd things have been going on is I have always felt very exposed. And for me, my sense of safety is the opposite. To be out in the desert, to me, that's very safe.
Out in the open, yeah, I see what you mean.
Sorry, yeah, because you can see what's coming.
You could run in any direction as well if there's danger.
Yeah, you'd have to run for a jolly long way to get anywhere, but you could just keep running.
Yeah, you would literally be still running now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I'm just going down the shop. 3 weeks later. Oh no, I'm nearly there.
And it's true. You know, you say over there, it's just down the road, but it'd be 70, 100, 150, 200 Ks down the road. Just down the road.
Exactly. Just as an aside, so I know you've probably got to go in a minute, but tomorrow night I'm just popping out for a chicken palmy, which is, you know, dinner, and it just happens to be an hour up the road. And to me, that is, oh, you know, just ducking out, just going to pop out for a chicken palmy and I'll be back later on. And it's a 2 hour round trip. But that is actually incredibly close. I've done a 6 hour round trip to get a pizza.
It better be good pizza.
It was worth it.
It was worth it.
Oh, and listen, this has been such a good experience. I know that, you know, people do thank you, and I hear their gratitude in their voice to you. And I am also saying a big, enormous thank you to you, because you do, you make people feel so comfortable. And I hope I didn't ramble on too much. But yeah, a big, big thank you to you for having a chat, making me feel relaxed, and yeah, for just letting me get that off my chest, because I have tried to tell a couple of people a couple of times and it didn't end well.
Yeah, I hear you. And you know, you haven't just told a couple of people, you know, you've told thousands and thousands of people all over the world now, literally all over the world. So well done. And that's, you know, that's what it's about. It's a comfortable place to come and share it, you know?
Yeah. And I do love listening to the episodes, especially the Throwback Thursdays, because those are the ones I've not heard yet. And I tell you, I'm listening at every moment I get to every episode. You know, once you open that door, a little crack, you can't close it. And then suddenly the door's open and you're getting flooded with all these stories. And people's experiences are so wide and so varied. And it's wonderful that they can all be validated in the way that you do that. So yeah, thank you.
In fact, I get emails from people which have listened to all the episodes and they have to restart listening again, and they keep saying, will you release more? Really, release more.
And you've done so many, and statistically speaking, there are more people in the world and more people seeing more things, and there are more avenues for them to report their stories. And so it's just going to keep growing exponentially.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Johanna, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
You are very welcome. Thank you very, very much for having me. And yes, we will talk again soon.
You enjoy the rest of your evening, and keep in contact. I'll speak to you soon. All right, take care of yourself.
Thank you. See you.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Angelo and Johanna for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening.
I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.